You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and what a last 24 hours we have had. Very, very exciting stuff. As, of course, many of you know, Donald Trump did not just win last night. He had an absolute blowout, won all five states, which was absolutely amazing, and now has actually topped Mitt Romney's total votes he got in the primary season in 2012, and is very close to crossing over what John McCain got. And it's now estimated he's going to get the most votes ever in a Republican primary. So take that to the anti-Trump, anti-white Republican establishment, that the people are coming out, and tens of thousands of Democrats in places like Pennsylvania crossed party lines, overwhelmingly white working class voters, to be able to say that they're tired of politics as usual. And Sven was going to be my guest today, but we had such an exciting development. He'll be joining me tomorrow. But my good friend Steve Smith, who is on the line, actually won a blowout of his own. He was able to win his position for the county Republican Party in an absolute Trump-style landslide. So Steve's on the line. So Steve, how are you doing today? How do you feel after your victory?
Well, I feel great, man. I'm excited.
So tell us a little bit for our listeners about kind of who you are, because you've been involved you know, in nationalist politics for a really long time. You know, I consider you a good personal friend of mine. You know, all movement politics aside, I've known you for a long time. So so tell folks a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been involved in the pro-white cause, organized pro-white cause, since around 1990. I joined a variety of organizations in my early years. Organizations now that I think fit the Hollywood stereotype, because when I was younger, I didn't know any better. I fall with the Zio Media stereotype of what a white national should be, like join Klan groups or wear Third Reich regalia. But as you get older, you get wiser, and you know them things don't help you. It just make you look like I'm an evil Nazi cult, and you really don't want victory if you join groups like that. This is my personal opinion.
Well, and that's actually an interesting thing, because, you know, Keystone United, you guys are, again, great friends of our party and good personal friends. And Keystone United has really been on the cutting edge of, you know, kind of following a European style form of nationalism, because, you know, one of the things I like to talk about is that nationalism is not fringe. Nationalism is actually the norm. If you were to ask any group of people around the planet, the majority of people are nationalists. I mean, you know, I've talked to guys who, you know, have been prison guards and stuff like that. You talk to you know, black folks, and they're nationalists. You talk to them on the streets, and taking care of your own people is natural for blacks, Asians, Hispanics, Arabs, every group of people. But of course, it's demonized when whites do it, but we are not fringe. Our ideology is not fringe. The idea of viewing your people as an extended family. That's just normal everyday things around the world, but in the West, it's been so demonized. So what kind of made your transformation from kind of the stereotypical white nationalism, where, again, of course, they've invested billions of dollars in rewriting history, then in demonizing nationalists and presenting this kind of fringe form of nationalism that won't gain any traction amongst normal families, normal people. What kind of opened your eyes to that big change?
I think the birth of my son was like the turning point around 2007. I just met so many nut jobs that are attracted. We get a large percentage of nut jobs that are attracted to our calls because they see the Zio Media stereotype. They all fit in right along. So I just got tired of it.
It promotes their agenda. It actually benefits the left, and that's why they'll give so much attention to people when they're out promoting racial hatred, when nationalism is about you know, love of your own people. It's not about hating anybody. You know, if we were on a moon colony and there were only Europeans there, I would still be a nationalist because I'd want my extended family to be healthy, to have a future, to maintain our traditions, to have strong families. That's normal. But it plays into the hands of the media. And that's why they give so much exposure, whether on daytime television or Jerry Springer or anything like that, or the History Channel to people that fall into a stereotype of not being nationalist, but being, you know, supremacist or hate filled. They'll give those people all the access because they're, it promotes their narrative to turn normal white people off of being pro-white.
Exactly. As I said, I've kind of not many people that have come to me in private and say, I agree with what you're saying, but I'm afraid to say it publicly. And that's a sad commentary on the state of the world today, where you can't even speak the truth without being demonized. That should be opening up people's eyes that what we are doing is right, and we should not be afraid to publicly speak it. I've been doing it for many years now. I'm gainfully employed. It's the way you do it, and you'll resonate with ordinary people, because a lot of people are on our side, but they see groups, I won't mention their names, that wear outdated regalia, counterproductive tactics, and they're turned off by that because they don't want to be associated with that. We got to be like normal white men and women and meet these people on the streets and do it in an intelligent and friendly manner. It's as simple as that. It's a very simple formula. And if more people followed it, we already have victory by now.
Oh, I agree. And, again, it's the sort of thing that I saw, you know, in the trips I've been able to take to Europe, where, you know, in Golden Dawn party meetings, they've got doctors next to farmers, they've got men and women, they've got young and old. And, you know, that in Greece, they're having a movement of the people, and that's how they're able to talk. They talk in a way about fighting for not only a better reality now, but a better future for your kids and your grandkids, and maintaining your culture and your identity. And that message resonates and it works. And that's where I've really seen in America, we need to transform ourselves. It's not changing our principles of being pro-white. It's simply following a more European example of nationalism that is that's based on love and community versus antics on the 6 o'clock news of alienating normal white people. And you're in Pennsylvania, and of course Donald Trump won Pennsylvania last night overwhelmingly. And what are your thoughts on the Trump phenomenon? Because when it comes to issues like immigration and trade and standing up to political correctness, he's obviously had a huge impact. I mean, he's mobilizing, like I said at the beginning of the show, he's got more votes now than Mitt Romney got in the entire process in 2012. And Mitt Romney was pretty much the undisputed candidate for the Republican Party. So that shows me millions more people are getting involved. What impact? I mean, obviously Donald Trump is not, you know, a white advocate, but he's definitely kind of reawakening a discussion on issues of national identity and nationalism. So what impact have you seen in Pennsylvania, and in general, do you think he's kind of having, given a shot in the arm to folks like us?
Well, let me tell you, Monday night I went to the Donald Trump rally in Wilkesboro, Pennsylvania. And I think the news claimed that was the biggest Trump rally to date that he's had during his campaign. It was in a major arena called the Mohegan Sun Arena. He went by seats, what, about 15,000 seats? I'm not sure. I'm not sure the exact account, but they're well over 10,000. And the place was packed to the gills. In fact, they had people waiting outside that couldn't even make it in because the arena, it was a sports arena. Jeez. So his impact on Pennsylvania is huge. And then the fact that he won Pennsylvania and all the other primary states on Tuesday by a wide margin, over 60% of the vote in each primary, shows the impact he's having. And he doesn't back down. The reason I like Donald Trump is the first thing, he put immigration, stopping the illegal alien invasion at the forefront of his campaign. That's what I like about him the most. And he brings it up at every rally. He doesn't back down when people call him a racist. He doesn't apologize. Another reason I like him. And so that's the reason why he's got my vote, and he's resonating with a lot of people, a lot of white people.
Issues like in Pennsylvania. I mean, Pennsylvania used to be a mecca of production. I mean, same in places like Michigan, and he's doing very well, you know, in polls here in Indiana, because we used to have good factory jobs. And, you know, now with unemployment, as high as it is, and the suicide rate amongst the white population is higher than it's been in 30 years now. You know, drug addiction is huge, because I truly believe that people have just lost hope. And it's not because they've done anything wrong. It's You know, they want to work. They want to provide for their families. They want hardworking jobs. But it's these bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. that with things like NAFTA have shipped millions of industrial jobs overseas. And then while they're losing us, you know, good paying blue collar jobs, at the same time, they're importing millions of third world laborers to compete with us in the job market. So even if you get a job, your wages are down because it's, you know, you don't have to be an economics major to know supply and demand for wages is one of the most defining things. If there's 10 guys for five jobs, they're going to hire the guys that can do the job for the lowest price. I mean, that just is economics. And these politicians have absolutely waged an unrelenting campaign, especially against white blue collar workers and their families. And I think that's why you see such a high rate of drug addiction and suicide and depression. And Donald Trump is simply saying, look, we need to bring these jobs back. We should bring these jobs back, and we should have an America first policy. And both the establishment forces within Republicans and Democrats don't put America first, don't put our people first, which is insane because they're supposed to be representatives of the American people. But they're more interested in globalism and in pleasing their big bankers and multinational corporations who, of course, fund their campaigs. I mean, what, you know, that's an interesting point. What do you think the impact is on the fact that Trump is funding his own campaign? I mean, do you think that, I mean, I do, but I want to know your thoughts. Do you think that's a really defining issue for what makes him different than Mitt Romney or John McCain or Marco Rubio or any of the old establishment hacks? Because they've got to beg for money from, you know, these interests, and that makes them bought and sold. I mean, what impact do you think that's had on people's perception of Trump and on Trump being able to say what he actually feels?
Well, absolutely. That's not a lot of reason he resonates, because he's not bought out. He's not beholden to lobbyists. He's not beholden to the Israel lobby. And another reason I think he resonates is the fact that he is his own man. He really doesn't need a job to be president. He has enough power. He has all these companies. He's rich enough. He really doesn't need a job of president. In fact, he'd probably be moving to a house. The White House is probably smaller than the house he lives in now. He really doesn't need the aggravation. But he's taking all this aggravation, being called a racist, people trying to boycott, all these protesters. Did he really need to say he's rich enough to not to need his aggravation? He's doing this, I think, for a good reason. He really wants to try. He thinks he wants to make America great again. I really believe that he wants to do this.
Well, and that's the big break, because I mean, when you have establishment politicians that, I mean, I've seen it myself here in, you know, the state of Indiana. You see a guy runs for state senate, and then he or state rep, and then he runs for state senate, and then he gets a representative seat. You know, our representative Todd Young is running now for Senate. And of course, he has his eye on the presidency. And there are these people that have literally spent their entire adult lives working within the party establishment, and they work their way up. And they've never had real jobs. They've never created real jobs. They've never actually interacted with the real world. But they live in this walled off community of the political establishment. And I think that's why they're so out of touch. I mean, the Republicans have been saying for months now that Donald Trump is going to peak. You know, he'll never get 50% of all Republicans to support him. And now he's getting 60% of the vote. They have no idea what it's like to be a factory worker or a plumber or an electrician or a stay at home mom, or just the lives that normal people live and the realities of the economy, of the impact of immigration. I mean, all of these, you know, especially politicians, it's just like on the issue of guns, you know, these anti-gun politicians have armed security around them and their children at all times, but they can't understand why normal people would want to be able to protect their homes and their lives against the rampant crime in our communities. They're so isolated. We've adapted to have this political class in the United States that has no connection with real people. And I mean, that's I think one of the fundamental differences between what Trump is presenting and what we're presenting as white advocates who are getting involved in politics, that we actually live this every day. We're not establishment politicians who have spent 20 or 30 or 40 years living off the government dole and playing the game and playing the system. We're actually real people. And Donald Trump, you know, obviously he came from a rich family, but he's taken, you know, the initial investment his dad gave him to make billions of dollars. You know, he's actually created jobs. He's actually created opportunities and deals with the real world people. I was watching an interview with some of the guys that did construction on one of Trump's buildings, saying that he would come down to the job site and interact with people and, you know, actually be connected with his workers and make sure they were being treated right. And that to me is what a leader does, you know, actually finds out about the struggles that his workers and the people that he represents are going through. But our political establishment has no idea about that because they live in an ivory tower.
You know, the funny thing is, when I was going around to collect signatures for my petition to get on the ballot with my son, I knocked on the door of this one lady, and she said, she asked me, I told her what I was running for, and she goes, well, who do you support for president? I said, Donald Trump. And she told me about how she worked for Donald Trump and how he helped her out. He used to be real nice to all the employees and this and that. I'm like, wow, all right.
That's a good indicator of someone's morals, you know, if you're actually looking out for the people. That's the difference between a boss and a leader. A boss just, you know, pushes people around and makes demands, but a leader actually leads, you know. An officer in the military doesn't just order his men forward, he charges with them. And that to me is the definition of leadership, and that's what a country needs, you know. If you look at countries like Russia, for instance, Vladimir Putin, he's a leader, you know. Different leaders around the world are ones who are actually on the ground in the trenches fighting for the best interests of their communities and their constituents. And I don't see, I mean, do you see any other mainstream politicians other than probably Ron Paul? You know, I was involved with Ron Paul in 2012 as a volunteer. Have you seen any politicians in the past two decades that have actually been leaders and not just bosses?
Last two decades? Now, I can go back to 89, maybe David Duke when he was state representative, but other than that, no.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Well, what made you, you know, a question of, getting political? Because I've been able, I've been truly blessed to be able to meet so many people within our cause. And so many people are coming to this idea that we have to be engaged politically because, you know, whether it's holding a rally or an event or a concert, whatever you're doing, and all that's great, it needs to be channeled towards having some success, to be able to have a say within the society, to be able to make a difference. And politics seems to be the way. And there's a lot of people in a lot of different groups that, especially over the past few months, have been coming to me saying they think, being involved politically on the local level is so important. What inspired you, a few years ago to get involved at all? What really made that change for you? And what have you seen working in local politics in your community?
Well, when the Ron Paul campaign in 2008, when he first ran for president, that got me more involved in politics. And in 2012, during the 2012 presidential primary, I went in the vote. I voted for Ron Paul for president. And then I saw for Republican County Committee, nobody was running. So I typed in my name, hit a check mark. I really didn't think anything of it. It was more like a lark than anything else. I said, there's no way I'm going to win, but I'll just write my name in. Who knows? Nobody else running. So a few weeks later, I got me a certificate in the mail that I won an election. I was like, oh my God, this is great. So I proceeded. Put it on Stormfront and some other pro-white message boards. And next thing you know, man, I guess that's Southern Poverty Law Center or whatever got a hold of it. And then it was a big firestorm. The State Democratic Party got a hold of it. Said this evil white supremacist, quote unquote, is a member of the Republican Party committee. So it was a big national media firestorm. And I withheld it, man. I'm not backing down. I look at my son and say, I'm not backing down because I know in my heart I'm right. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not acting like an idiot. So I just withstood it, and here I am.
And winning with a landslide.
A 4 years later, but about a few months after I was elected, I went to all the committee meetings, and they appointed me as an officer. I was a secretary for a while.
So, well, and that just goes to show, I mean, what was the reception? Because, of course, you know, and this is what the left always does. And I'm trying to explain this to many different people. And, I'm glad, you know, we're on the same page and a lot more folks are getting on the same page to realize that the worst the left can do to you is call you racist, call you a fascist, call you, you know, all the buzzwords that they love to throw out. But they can't do anything. That's actually they're a paper tiger for all of their money, for all of their influence, for all of their media control. If you just stand your ground, eventually they'll just skulk away and look for an easier target. I mean, I truly believe the left has the mindset of, you know, a middle school bully, where if you cry or you run to the teacher or you go to your mom, they'll bully you even harder. But if you stand your ground and say, look, you're not getting my lunch money, and I'll sock you if you try and take it, they're gonna try and find an easier victim. And if you can just withstand that first barrage, because the first barrage is always the hardest. I mean, I remember when I got involved with campus advocacy, it was, we were just, doing what we were doing. And before I knew it, there were news trucks outside my house and people were saying all these things and threatening to kill me and, you know, all this stuff, threatening to kill my dog. And I don't even have a dog, you know, like it's crazy stuff. But once they find out you're not going to break, you're not going to apologize, you're not going to buckle down and ask for their forgiveness. And, you know, that they'll mostly leave you alone and just allow you to get down to the business of getting things done because they're bullies. I mean, is that kind of the experience you've had with, the organized left?
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you don't back down, what else can they do to you? You know.
Well, exactly, and they're weak. It was actually kind of funny. I was with several of our party comrades in Louisville over the weekend, and you know, down in kind of the hipster district, but they've got the best pizza. So we were down there and we were hanging out. We'd done some activism in one of the local coal towns in East Kentucky, and we were on our way home. And a bunch of supposed Antifa and their freaking jackets and hammer and sickles, and I mean you've seen it a million times, walk in, and they outnumbered us pretty significantly, probably about 3-1, and they decided to start shooting their mouths off, and we just stood there and we're like, we can go outside if you want to, and then they all kind of like looked at each other and then quieted down, and then we just we were done with eating, and we literally parted the Red Sea. You know, they made space for us to just walk out the door. And they're cowards. Even when they outnumber us, they're cowards. You know, they say they hate the police and, Black Lives Matter and Antifa, chant about pigs in blankets and other horrible things about our law enforcement officers, but they always hide behind them. You know, for some group that supposedly hates the cops so much, they sure as heck love to hide behind them to just yell insults at you, but they don't have any moral courage. And I truly believe on the side of nationalism, because we're going up against a corrupt political establishment, a corrupt media, and of course, all of these far left groups get funding from George Soros and these other international bankers. They are the establishment, but they don't have any moral courage. But on our side, to be willing to say, I'm going to stand for the truth, no matter what names you call me, no matter what happens, I'm going to stand for our principles. I think our side has far more moral courage than the left does. That they again just have this bully mentality, and they're fundamentally weak.
Oh, they're physically weak too. That's why they had to have numbers before they started anything. While back, was it 2 years ago? 2 years ago, Antifa had a rally in Philadelphia at the CUNY Library. Mm-hmm. And I think a month before there was a Klan rally there or something. There was a Klansman that was part of a town watch. They had a rally there against the Klan. And they decided to go to one of the members of Keystone United's houses, was down the street. But none of the men were there and protest outside their house. And I was mad about this. I found out that a rally the next month. And so the guys in Philadelphia, we organized a counter protest. So I got there. It was about six of us at first. And we decided to go down there where they're having the rally and block the steps so they wouldn't have the rally. So they show up. There's about nine of them. I think six guys and three girls. They saw us there and they didn't. They were quiet. It was Tom Keenan, Daryl Lamont Jenkins. They were standing there. One guy was literally shaking. He was trying to take a camera. He was literally shaking because he was so scared. Because when the numbers are close to even, they wouldn't do anything physically. They wouldn't even say anything until the cops came over and said, "Hey, oh, good, you saying something?"
Oh yeah, no, I was gonna say. I mean, yeah, exactly. They love to hide behind the cops, and it's kind of that mentality of it's like you go to a bar and there's some guy that's really mouthy, and he's just telling his guys to hold me back, and it's just chest bumping until the bouncer shows up, because the guy knows if he actually got in a fight, he'd get his butt kicked, and that's how they work. They are the ones who, contrary to the media narrative, I have experienced everything from being, attacked with guys who had knives and locks and socks to throwing balloons full of urine, which is just really gross, to, them throwing rocks and all these sorts of things. And we don't do that. You know, we go and when we stand for our principles, we stand strong and stand honorably. And the only times I've ever seen fights break out between nationalists and leftists is when the leftists are the ones who attack, when they think they have the numbers. You know, when they've rounded up all the hippie college students and they throw them in like Russian conscripts in World War II, like in a wave, that's when they get violent, but it's always them who start the violence. It's always them that are trying to harass people's families and get people fired and are even willing to engage in criminal activity. It's always their side. They are always the violent ones. We're the ones who stand peacefully and for law and order. And that's a huge difference that I think more and more people are standing up to. And you can kind of see it within the Donald Trump phenomenon when you've got these protesters who are blocking highways, who are throwing bricks at cops, who are punching police horses, who it was just said in California, several of these leftists actually maced Trump supporters, including an 8 and an 11-year-old girl, that it's the left are the ones who are always violent, and then they play the victim, and that's just their psychology.
Exactly. Another contrast is, whenever Keystone United, we went to several leftist events. There was one back in 2008 for the NAACP, that anti-hate summit, in response to flyers we passed around the town. They thought we'd never come out from out the shadows. We came out and went to their event. And I told everybody before the event, we're going to be cordial. We're just going to go in there, wait for a question and answer session, and then we'll say our view. Unlike the leftists, they have to shout things down because they can't debate for their points because they know they're wrong, essentially. So they got to shout down our opposition because they know we're right.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if you actually see with the left, I've been to protests on the East Coast, on the West Coast, in the Midwest, in the South. I've been everywhere. I've even been over to Europe. And you know, the funny thing is, every Antifa leftist group has the same chants, that they're all on point of chanting the same five or six different slogans. Because you're right, they do not have the ability to argue with our points. And I saw a tweet that some leftist put out that said that that evidence is used by cis straight white men to reinforce like white supremacy, and evidence doesn't have anything against our ideology. And if you're getting to the point where you say that no amount of evidence or facts will change your mind, then you have, beyond even a religious devotion, it's a cultish devotion to this cult of multiculturalism and anti-white ideology. And that's just what they are. I truly think these organized leftists are cultists in this ideology, because as we saw like in Norway, that there was a left-wing politician that was actually raped by a refugee, and he still supports him, you know, putting all these refugees in Europe. Like that to me is absolute insanity. These people are literally crazy.
I really think cultural Marxism, liberalism, whatever you want to call it, is actually a mental illness. Cause I really, these people are so ingrained with their idiocy. It just boggles the mind.
Oh, I totally agree. And we've got a few minutes left, and I want to know, to tell our listeners, why they should get involved in politics. You know, why should they follow, I truly think is kind of the Steve Smith model, because you inspired me, partially by you getting elected, to want to go political. And what Keystone United's been doing is one of the big things that's inspired me to take the direction my activism and our members take. So why should people follow, the model that you guys really pioneered of the way you present yourselves and then getting involved in politics?
Well, since we got a short time, let me just fast forward to yesterday when I voted, or this morning when I found out the results of my election. I went to the polling place, and I found out I had 73 votes cast. I got a landslide victory of 69 votes. I mean, 69 people voted for somebody who was openly pro-white in a small little committee man election in a small part of Pittston City. So I get that many votes, we can win this thing. It's this grassroots activism. We start at the small level, work our way up. I think we can achieve victory.
Well, exactly. And I totally agree. And, just so folks know, because they always say, I hear some people that, of course, want to justify not doing anything, that, we can't afford to run in local elections because, things like local county commission or school board, things like that, are decided by those margins you're talking about. You know, less than 100 votes, many of these elections, for positions that actually have a huge impact on people's everyday lives. So, what did it cost in both time and money to win your landslide victory?
Yeah. Not very much time at all or money. I had t-shirts made up, but it was just something on a lark. Just have a campaign, have some t-shirts made up. I have a good friend that makes them, Stacy. She makes, does quality work. In case you guys want to know, look her up. But, it really doesn't cost anything at all. A little time. Go around, collect 10 signatures to get on the ballot. That's all you need. It took me and my son, we walked around the block about an hour. Knocked on doors, got to meet people. was a nice day, and it's very easy to do. As I always say, if I can do it, almost anyone, especially you, Matt, you can do it. I can see you being president. You're so well spoken, very personable. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, brother. And that's, you know, the thing, you know, is kind of my final thought for the day is just to be able to tell folks again that, you know, Steve Smith is an activist that I know and I respect and I consider my friend. But if we're talking about just to get on the ballot, you know, if you're in an area and you want to be a Republican or you want to support the Traditionalist Worker Party, you know, usually the ballot requirements for signatures is you have to get a few more votes as a third party. So you might have to get 20 votes or 30 votes to get on the ballot. But you can win this. We can challenge the establishment through grassroots activism. And Steve has shown us we can win as an explicit pro-white advocate, you know, a father, a community member. We can win. And that's what folks need to know, that the system tries to lie to us and tell us that we don't have power, that we can't organize. But Steve, you know, thank you so much for joining us today, just to be able to tell us the message that we can win and we will march forward and things are moving in our direction. So I just wanted to thank you so much for being with me here today, my friend. And I'll look forward to seeing you this weekend. And, you know, I'm sure it will be a great time. And then to all of you, dear listeners, be inspired, because we can take this back. We can take back our communities street by street, county by county, town by town, because our message is organic, it's natural, and people are waiting for us to be their advocates. So, you know, the time is now to get involved. So thank you again, Steve, and thank you, dear listeners. I'll be here tomorrow with Sven as my co-host, and then we'll round up the week with John Friend. And I'll look forward to seeing you all tomorrow, same time, same place. So talk to you all soon, and hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.